When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
All right, we are here with the wonderful David Belsky, CEO and founder of Flower Hire. Welcome to a special edition of Cannabis Hour in a Way. Super happy to have you, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's actually great to see you guys again. I think it's been a year.
Man, it's been a while.
Take me back to the Thoughts on Blue.
An eventful year at that.
what are you talking about?
I don't know. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Miami Beach or South Beach? Is it South Beach or Miami Beach? What? I don't know. It's a beach in Miami. It's great, and it's beautiful. But Dave hosted a party there. If you missed out, I don't know. We may host another one next time we're in Miami. You know, just make sure you're there. Dave, we're here for you though. We want to hear about you. Tell us about who you are. Maybe a little bit about Flower Hire and what you all do in the cannabis industry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I am the founder of Flower Hire. We do recruiting and executive search for cannabis. Our niche has been six-figure cannabis jobs. We've done nearly 500 placements in the last 3 years, evenly distributed between California operators, multi-state operators, and single-state operators in emerging markets. Obviously, we're launching a technology product geared more towards the hourly workforce here soon, and amongst some other exciting things. So, happy to be here.
So, you mentioned six-figure cannabis jobs. A lot of viewers must be asking, how do I get one of those? I mean, it's the dream combo, weed and six figures. How do we get one of those?
Well, I think about cannabis as any skill set that somebody has in a traditional company, CBG, agriculture, technology, there's that department within a cannabis company. There's that need. So I think it's about, first realizing that there is a home in this industry for most types of people should they pursue it and really educate themselves about the industry and make themselves an ideal candidate.
Yeah. Good insight. And I do want to touch on your kind of, I would say focus around the, we'll say average Joe, average person like me and Javi, the careers in cannabis side of things. But, in looking at who you've been targeting or who has been coming to you for these six-figure jobs, we've had a lot of conversations on Cannabis Hour over the past few months about CPG executives, veterans from finance. Is that more valuable than a legacy grower leading a company? I think you're well positioned to kind of give some insight into that discussion about where you think things are going, maybe who you see as being hired, if there's a trend specifically in those types of jobs. And I'm sure it varies from CEO to CFO as well.
Sure. I think the most successful companies that are currently in cannabis have a good combination of people from the cannabis background, know how to grow happy plants and make fantastic products for consumers, but also have, kind of business operators with experience in other industries. And if you're looking at the source of where talent comes from into cannabis, CPG is definitely at the top. CPG, retail, hospitality, agriculture, and that type of background tends to line up. But right, in the finance world, when you're talking about finance and accounting, someone with a CPA, or someone worked in investment banking, obviously there's a lot of those type of folks in this industry as well. And I think that the other question is what type of jobs are currently in demand in this industry, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And who's hiring? And I get that question asked a lot. And I think the biggest trends that we really focus on within the existing flower hire business is you see a lot of that sort of site operations, general manager, plant manager type that's running a production or processing facility or an indoor greenhouse grow or a store. So kind of the adults in the room that could come in and implement systems and processes to enable a business in the space to scale is definitely in demand. Along with, we'll call it, you know, sort of financial and like infrastructure operations. I think a lot of lessons were learned in this industry, you know, in 2019 about, you know, there is a model for profitability and it might be a razor thin margin in a lot of cases, but, you know, you've seen a lot of sort of supply chain analysis, insights and innovation, you know, cost accounting, like those type of skill sets have really, you know, been in demand as companies search for making smarter business decisions, be able to defend their spend and in focusing on initiatives that could actually net a profitable outcome, right? Versus just kind of let's just grow and grow and grow and blitz scale. Now there's like, well, how are you going to make money? And that's been a obviously a sign of maturation in the industry. And it's a good sign of what's kind of been happening over the last couple quarters of some of the bigger companies really starting to throw up some impressive revenue numbers. They've kind of sort of figured that out.
Yeah. And I think that right there, and that, you know, Javi, you probably have some great insights there. That right there to me is why this bubble's not going to pop like it did before. It's growing, I think, at a steady rate. This year, I think, will tell a lot about where this industry is going. Maybe Dave has some insights in terms of where employment's going to go with maybe a few new blue members of the Senate, along with other branches. But, we're not seeing any seven-figure jobs anymore, are we? You know, and that was, I think, part of the issue before is we had a few seven-figure jobs and that didn't sit well with some people.
Well, I think if, right, no, all cash comp is not seven figures in this industry, right? You know, the average salary of a C-level position that we've filled, which is, you know, dozens in the last several years, is between the 200 to 300, you know, with some outliers above that as well. So yes, $1 million in cash comp, that's not defensible anymore, right? Yeah. But $1 million in on-target earnings over several years with, you know, performance drivers and long-term incentives and equity, that is still on the table for some of these, you know, executive types and leaders within these companies.
So one thing, you know, you're talking about compensation structures, right? So let's imagine I'm a mid-level executive or a high-level executive or whatever, just someone, you know, trying to negotiate a new salary in the industry. Do you have any tips as to like what kind of combination and to go for, you know, how do you balance the ask between actual cash, equity, you know, shares at vest, options? What do you recommend?
Well, I think categorically, if this is someone's first job in cannabis and they've identified a fit and they're about to in that offer stage, like expect to take a cut in terms of total cash comp or at least stay on par in terms of base. I think that, there's still a lot of companies that are figuring out long-term incentives that haven't quite gotten to it yet as well. So I think it really varies, you know, but I think that sort of executive level already shared sort of average comp. And obviously the equity drivers depend on the stage of the company. Like somebody who's early into a company, less than 50 people, that's an executive may get, you know, half a point to a point and a half or more. But if it's a, you know, 1,000 person company, nowhere close to that, right? Mm-hmm. So it varies based on stage. And then, you know, a VP level that maybe has multi-site, scope of their experience, you know, that 160 to sort of 200 is about the mean of what the base salary is for those positions. And, you know, that director level, in that mid 100s and that sort of site manager level from a store standpoint, it's like, you know, 60 to 80K from a retail GM up to like a 100, 120K if it's like a processing type facility. So it started to become standardized, which is good, mm-hmm. but obviously, data on salaries and trends is something that my clients ask me for all the time because it doesn't really mm-hmm. exist.
Yet. It's coming. So, you know, let's attack a little bit of employment in the past year. You know, obviously been some roadblocks. But hopefully, you know, all going, I don't know what I'm talking about. All going away soon, hopefully. Always light at the end of the tunnel. You know, yeah, exactly. So maybe tell us, you know, how did that affect you guys in particular at Flower Hire, but also, you know, what you saw within the industry?
You know, absolutely. I mean, Q2 of last year, the whole world ground to a halt. Cannabis was not excluded from that. However, the essential services designation that came on this industry, actually, once people started figuring out what the heck was actually going on in the world and realized that, oh my God, we actually have more demand than we were even expecting, the hiring train picked back up for this industry, and it really has not slowed down. I actually say after 420 of last year, hiring was kind of back to where it was, you know, before COVID. And it's only accelerated from there. On top of that, you actually see with that essential services stamp, like more and more job seekers from different types of industries, like, wow, this is actually legit. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And so the amount of applicants looking at cannabis and weed as like, this might be my next career move is increased dramatically, you know, over the past, you know, 6 or so months. And that acceleration has continued. I mean, we at Flower Hire, we saw double our productivity between Q3 and Q4 last year in a short amount of time. We're trying to keep up here, which is great, you know?
That's a great segue. Is that potentially the impetus behind this new site that you've launched? We'd love a little insight into careers in cannabis.
Yeah, I'm very excited about careers in cannabis. And really what careers in cannabis is, it serves as a candidate and consumer facing website that actually our partner Engine Sciences is launching along with Flower Hire X. And Flower Hire X is a B2B product that actually serves as a virtual talent manager, helping companies fill permanent hourly jobs with better qualified applicants and therefore improving retention. I mean, the idea behind this whole ecosystem, and this is something where we've placed executives into the space and operational leaders and HR leaders into the space, and they've asked us for a solution because a major pain point has been hiring hourly workers at scale. And what this whole careers in cannabis Flower Hire X ecosystem does is basically simply intelligently matches companies with candidates seeking a career in cannabis using AI.
Well, Javi, I think that answers your question about how we get into the cannabis industry.
Some people who've been around for a while might tell you, you know, it's kind of late, right? You kind of missed the train. But you're saying, you know, hiring is accelerating. So what's the situation there? Is it too late? Is it not too late? I mean,
I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm a blurter sometimes, but it's definitely not too late. I mean, without the new states coming online that, you know, where legalization measures passed in, you know, this past November, cannabis industry employment levels are expected to double over the next 3 years, even without that. So I think the value add of what we're trying to build here is for a company in cannabis, there's overwhelming response by job seekers, right? Yeah. And the idea is if you're a company in the space, it takes 5 seconds to create a job posting and using the Flower X tool. And that job posting, basically, we've created these power profiles, right? But each of the most common hourly job postings in cannabis have their own power profile, you know, like a like a bud tender, a cultivation associate, an extraction technician, right? And basically what happens is candidates have the chance to be evaluated along 59 different hard and soft skill attributes, you know, that come from like the Flower Hire brain. And the idea is we took that sort of understanding of cannabis and the type of roles in the industry and dumped it into AI created by the Engine Services team, right? And for the job seeker, the idea is you're not going to find, you know, another 300,000 hires in cannabis from existing people that work in cannabis. So as a job seeker, what the careers in cannabis ecosystem does is it basically gets you to understand what is my fit in cannabis, right? It allows you, you know, through some gamified quizzes that the engineering team from Engine has built to discover what type of jobs are relevant for their skills and be kind of directed towards those jobs. And what the AI does over the course of time for companies using Flywire X and the platform is it starts matching applicants specific to the companies and the type of roles they're looking for. Obviously, it takes a little time to build that up, but it's coming.
It's learning. So, I mean, we have a couple minutes left. I want to touch on two topics. One is, you know, tell us a little bit about the event you have coming up January 28th. You know, Benzinga is hosting a track, by the way, you know, wink, wink, check it out. But do tell.
Well, really, really excited to have you guys as part of the event for sure. The event is it's a virtual talent conference. It's meant to be a B2B conference where executives, HR leaders, operational leaders within cannabis can talk about how to build and manage a very engaged workforce in cannabis. You know, tricks for what to look for in hiring, you know, retention strategies, whatever. Because the idea here, guys, is cannabis is a middle-class job creator. You know, the hourly positions in cannabis pay $5 to $10 an hour beyond what other hourly jobs that are in other industries pay for, light industrial or retail, right? So, how do we, number one, cannabis should be the biggest job creator in the next decade in the United States, which is a crazy thing to say out loud. But how do we, at the same time, take advantage of this opportunity to make cannabis the best industry to work for? And one of the things that I've learned from, you know, talking to operators in the space over the last, you know, several years is that, you know, there's not a lot of insights where the community of people trying to solve the same problem together can come together. So the idea behind the conference is to bring together executives to talk about the talent puzzle in cannabis and how to solve it and create obviously value in that sense of community, as well as launch our, you know, Flower Higher X careers in cannabis ecosystem with our beta customers. And we actually have beta customers already live on the product, and the public launch here is going to be on January 28th at the event.
Super excited.
So you said $5 to $10 an hour higher than other industries. Is that, you know, is that public data or is that through companies you work for? I'm curious how that number comes about.
There's not public data. Yeah. So that answer is no, but that number comes about because it's just the, it's just reality, you know, like a retail bud tender job in cannabis will pay $16 to $20 an hour, you know, versus, you know, $10 to $12 an hour for something similar. And where does that come from? It's a great question. I mean, I think it started off a few years ago because cannabis is a little bit of a black sheep of employment and like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I should work in this industry. And to attract people, cannabis companies were paying more, and maybe also they couldn't offer the same benefits and it was perceived as less stable as other industries, right? Well, that's obviously not the case anymore. And so that trend has continued. At the end of the day, these are high margin businesses when they are actually executed on, and those margins and profitability is only going to grow as these, you know, different states accelerate in their local markets, right? So I think that working in cannabis isn't easy though. It's not like a big party. As you guys know, it's, you know, people are working really hard, but the great thing about this industry is that for the right people, they're who they want to be. They're who they are at work. They enjoy what they're doing. They're passionate about it. The hours fly by and they're really excited to go into work every day. And that's so unique, considering, you know, what's happened in the last 20, 30 years. Like, this industry is full of really engaged employees from the executive ranks to the light industrial and retail staff. And that's truly special.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have one last one for the last minute we have, you know, kind of a segue into our next interviewees. What are you seeing in terms of hiring trends in the beverages space, right? What kind of people are they looking for?
That's a great question. And I think that, the folks at Cann have really done a good job of bringing in kind of like world-class talent from all different industries to their team. And I'm really impressed to watch their story grow and evolve. But I think for beverage specific, beverage surprisingly has been kind of an afterthought for a lot of the bigger operators in the space. Now, people with experience in beverage from a marketing, sales, and operations standpoint have found a home in this industry. And there's lots of examples of alcohol, wine, and spirits, you know, expats that now work in cannabis, right? So I think from a from a beverage standpoint, you find like your production sort of plant manager types, you find your retail sales folks, you find your brand management type folks. And those are probably the most common ones that you see for any company doing beverages.
Absolutely. Dave, appreciate you being on, man. I mean, you're obviously a wealth of knowledge within this space, especially when it comes to employment. But I don't think this is the end. I think everybody should check out Careers in Cannabis, right? Careersincannabis.com. Is that where we can find information?
Yep. And you can find more info on our website, flowerhire.com. And last thing I'll mention is, over the past, several years, we've filled, dozens of C-level positions and also done, board searches with some of the largest companies in the space. But what we've done is we've spun off a brand, Flower Hire Senior Advisors, and we brought on somebody, Brian Fitzgerald, who's now running that brand for us. So mm-hmm. Flower Hire has our core, your six-figure salary jobs, our executive, and now we have a technology solution for the hourly workers. And I'm really excited to bring That's that awesome. Into 2021 and keep running, guys.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see what's next, man. This is incredibly exciting. And Benzinga is excited to be a part of it.
Love you guys. Thanks a lot.
Man, mutual, my friend. We'll see you soon. We'll see you on the 28th.
January 28th, flowerhire.com. See you then. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you, my friend. James Pellegrini of Goat Rodeo Capital. Probably the best name I have ever experienced, just ever. I'm not even going to say while I've been doing this. Just ever. James, how are you, my friend? Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys too. Great to have a chance to talk to you today.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for sticking with us. Honestly, first things first, most important thing, you have the best headshot I think I've seen in the space with the
thank you.
Holding up the beverage. It's just super bougie.
it was the intention. That was a project I worked on many years ago. And I'm good friends with the creative director that was helping with the photo shoot. And that was a joke as an afterthought that found its way into one of the launch decks. So it's kind of, we recirculated every once in a while as a joke. I thought you guys would appreciate it's that. Stuck.
I like that. And honestly, an appropriate show to bring that back up. And I think appropriate to what you do as well. Do you want to dive in? Tell us who you are. Tell us about Go Rodeo.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I come from Bev Elk industry. So it's interesting that you just got off with David. I know that he touched on a lot of folks making their way into cannabis by mm-hmm. way of beverage alcohol. Yeah. I was lucky enough, better to be lucky than good. Found myself at E&J Gallo Winery and wound up working for who is now the CEO there, Ernest Gallo. And had my hands in the spirits business unit primarily, but working on both finance as well as new brand development. That's where I met my partner. He and I left on good graces to explore opportunities to work beyond just the Gallo portfolio, working with other major suppliers as well as some independent companies. It was during that time as consultants that we kind of got a foot in the door into the cannabis beverage space. And started to recognize that there were a lot of really intelligent, hardworking individuals with great ideas. And what they needed more than advice in a bill was working capital. So we stepped back and said, how do we help them? How can we bring them the advice and get them some of the growth capital that they need to get their ideas off the ground? And thus was born the idea to raise a venture capital fund.
Thus was born the idea for money. I like it. That's awesome, my friend. That's fantastic. So your focus on beverage, on cannabis, you guys, I think checking out your website, have invested in some pretty, I would say, unique, maybe craft. I'm not sure how you would like to describe it, but do you want to dive in a little bit to
also very successful?
It's successful for sure. But being an emerging industry, I want to label it, in a kind of a cool sort of way. I'd love to hear more about your mandate for these companies.
Sure. So what you'll find, and this is something that we bring with us from experience in alcohol working for a major supplier, is as a new brand in a regulated industry, it can be very difficult to get eyes on your product. And it really, traditionally in alcohol, it's kind of, we were to take a step back. So there's a supplier tier, a distribution tier, and then your retail tier. And typically, brands are built through the on-premise or the bar. And to get placement in a bar, you're really going point by point of distribution. You're trying to get support from the bartenders. super expensive, high attrition rate. So yeah. What we look for is brands that have something beyond just brand. And we look for that in, by way of whether it's intellectual property or a unique go-to-market system that can kind of bypass that early stage of growth, where again, it really is kind of like this rock fight that you're just trying to get attention as you go along. We want people who can kind of jump over that and scale a little quicker.
So what does that look like? I mean, don't spill a secret sauce for your portfolio companies, but you know, in general terms, you say they have a different go-to-market strategy. Like what makes a company special in that sense?
I'd be happy to. I'll touch on a couple examples. The first, we'll talk, you know, in beverage alcohol specifically, we have two investments that I think kind of exemplify this. The first is a company called Drinksmith, and they've created a patented package that allows you to separate the alcohol from fresh ingredients that can then be high pressurized packaged. That does a lot of things in order to maintain the quality of the cocktail. So that piece of IP suddenly makes it a little different. Their process, the moat that they've built around their supply chain makes them different. They've also pursued more of a direct consumer approach with their sales as opposed to just trying to get on shelf and hoping people pick it up and try it. The other would be, you know, One Hope Winery. And what One Hope has done is they've created, it's kind of like you could think of a Stella and Dot or an Amway for wine, but it's cause driven. So they've created a system, an entire fleet, if you will, of kind of franchisee wine stores. And they bring people into the organization. And these individuals are out actually doing, you know, that they're creating that same environment that you get when you walk into a winery.
Yeah.
That, you know, because like, what's the difference between a good drink and a great drink? Like a good drink is fresh ingredients, you know, high quality. And in company, a great drink is how many tattoos the bartender has that's serving it to you, you know, whether or not he's got that iconic, you know, suit vest on behind the bar. It's really where you can do it. So anytime you can kind of bring that type of environment and democratize that, we love getting involved in things like that.
Definitely. It's my, like the way I pick bars, right? Like when I go to a bar, like my one requisite is, you know, it has to have good drinks, but also it has to be cool. They have to, they have to put some energy, some money into making it cool and to making it different and to making it something else than drinking at home, right?
Yes. You know? I couldn't agree more. And I think that what you're starting to see is, you know, especially during, you know, 2020 with this pandemic, is how can you best emulate that experience at home? So we're really excited. Yeah. You know, a Drinksmith quality cocktail is as good of a cocktail as you can get at a high-end craft cocktail bar. You know, the experience that you can have with a One Hope cause entrepreneur, who are these you know, folks out in the field, is the same as sitting in a wine tasting room. You know, they have all the information. They can really bring that environment to you. And we love that. We love those types of opportunities.
So looking ahead, I think that's, you know, that's the conversation right now that we're all having is beverages in 2021. It's one of the main topics, you know, and obviously your companies are well positioned. So that's awesome, you know, but I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on this year specifically in the beverage space of cannabis. Is there one that's leading the way? Is there, or not? Maybe there's not one leading the way because it's so early. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So I think that there are two things that I'm starting to see in the space around cannabis beverage specifically. The first is there's a legacy consumer. And as you guys know, well, they shop on a potency paradigm. It's, you know, how many milligrams can you get for the cheapest price available? Yeah. Then you have the new entrants. Like if we're going to build a large beverage category, it's going to be built on the back of the incremental consumer. And the incremental consumer, they're looking for an analog they're familiar with. And that analog looks and feels most likely like alcohol, right? You can have five or six beers and you know how that's going to feel. Maybe that's your maximum, but one beer and you're not, you know, you're not going to be incapacitated. So it's providing low dose opportunities that are sessionable, but have quick efficacy. So I'm really excited. You guys are going to be talking with the can guys after me, I believe. I really like what they're doing. I think they have a very strong brand. And as we look into 2021, what I'm most interested in is as more and more states start to open up, is brand built within a single state going to be able to jump over those state lines? Once we have interstate commerce, can take its success that they're having in California and move into another state and be able to utilize that brand equity that's built here in California to help them grow. That's a big question that I have. And I don't know the answer. I don't know. But I do believe in cannabis beverage. And we believe in it so much that we look at the space and we say, how is it that we can get involved in cannabis beverage without necessarily betting on a single brand? Nascent market. I'm not sure who's going to be the big winner. But where we felt really comfortable is moving up in the supply chain. So instead of betting on a branded proposition, we stepped back and we said, okay, all these beverages are going to need a fast-acting ingredient. Who makes the best fast-acting ingredient on the marketplace right now that's supplying them? It's more of the Intel inside play. And that's what brought us.
You're betting Virtosa, right?
Yep, that's what brought us to Virtosa.
you're you know on the DL just plugging Virtosa.
Smart.
Tell us, you know, when they.
I've got
that's
to.
Like so a Pete and Jerry move.
See how I realized what he was talking about too.
Oh, of course.
yeah, I mean, that's where we're going.
Yeah, we've had Evelyn LaChapelle on here. I probably said her name wrong before, but they have a really, really very inclusive strategy. I love what they do. Virtosa really is an incredible company. So love that you guys are involved with them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you want to dive any further into that before I ask another question here.
Oh, no, please. It's just Bob.
Yeah. Maybe a little early. Have you started to think about subsectors of beverages in terms of wine, canned cocktails, quote unquote beer? Are these, I'm assuming they'll probably all start to stem away from each other at some point. Not yet. Totally understand that.
Yep.
But I'm curious what your thought is in that direction.
Look, I think that you want to be where the consumer that you're trying to attract is already exploring. And I think that what I see right now is in the growth of seltzer space, in the alcoholic sector, as being a place where I think cannabis can win. Because consumers are moving away, the consumers have kind of collectively yawned at the 30-year tyranny of light beer. And they've said, we don't really like light beer. We want something else. Right? No one really does. Right? And in comes seltzer. And all of a sudden, the growth of seltzer over the past, now what people don't recognize is it's very similar in composition to what you get from a light beer, but the flavor profile is very different. And there's a rise of a lot of independent seltzer brands, as well as, you know, some of the larger companies putting out their own seltzer brands. And I think if you want to be able to attract the eyes of consumers who are already exploratory in their beverage choices, you want to be in the place where beverage is booming and something that they're already familiar with. So I'm excited to see kind of where seltzer goes for cannabis beverage.
Yeah, you let me know because I'll be the first to buy it. I probably have single-handedly supported Truly through the quarantine. So
I love that. Yeah.
I'm one of those already there consumers. That's awesome. You know, we had a wine, an infused wine brand on several months ago, and they were saying their target audience really kind of came on organically, in terms of, you know, men in their 40s. You know, they weren't targeting that audience, but it came to them. So yeah, I'm curious.
She was saying that. It was a brand for women at first.
Yes, it was a brand for women, and a huge sector of their consumer base was men. So I'm curious if you're seeing a lot of that in the brands that you have worked with as well.
What I will tell you just on the surface, first I applaud them for being able to make that pivot. Like the market will always tell you where you belong. Consumers vote with their dollars. So if you have an idea and you think it's a really strong proposition for a specific demographic or psychographic, you're going to find out pretty quickly. And it's your job as a as an entrepreneur, as a brand manager, to recognize that and say, okay, how do we cater to that opportunity going forward? Yeah. So In the cannabis space, I think it's too early to tell where the opportunity is going to be. What I can tell you is that I've been surprised by some of the folks who are avid cannabis consumer users, who I would have thought would have been way towards the end of the long tail, if you will, for adoption. So I think it's about keeping an open mind and really communicating and educating. As education gets out there, people are going to be more comfortable with it. Those are kind of my thoughts overall on the space. In particular, it's hard to say. You know, we're going to see. This is an early. It's so early. It's nascent. Things are kind of developing as we go.
Yeah. Honestly, I love this conversation. I think it's so interesting, especially planning ahead for the year. I think we have to move forward here, but James, do you have any parting thoughts on the industry itself? Anything that you're looking forward to, if you're interested in people reaching out to you, where they can find you?
Yeah, you can definitely find us, goatrodeocapital.com if you want to reach out. As far as the industry in general, I am extremely excited. I think that there's my expectation as far as when we would see some sort of federal legalization has moved up quite a bit in the timeline. I think that's awesome. Seeing a lot of other states move in, but also you're starting to see a lot of smart money make its way into the space. And that's exciting in its own. So as long as the funding's there to support some of these earlier companies, these startups, I think we're going to develop something that is really going to be revolutionary. It's the second prohibition ending. And I'm really excited and happy to be able to be here and watch it and hopefully continue to participate in it.
Here's that. James Pellegrini of Goat Rodeo Capital. Sir, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate your insights.
Thanks, fellas. Stay safe out there.
All right. You as well. Stay healthy. Awesome. So, Javi, we have touched on employment and cannabis since COVID. And prior to that, the bubble popping, we have shifted into the beverage space from an investor's perspective. We have an exciting last interview of the show. Why don't you introduce him?
I mean, you've heard the praises, you know, that they received from the prior guests. This is a very beloved brand. You know, anyone you ask around in the industry, they'll tell you Can is great. So we have, you know, Jake Bullock and Luke Anderson, who are the co-founders of Can. They make cannabis beverages. They have a slew of very cool celebrity investors. So, Rohan, let's bring them on.
I'm very excited for this conversation. I want to ask them about Rhode Island. I feel like this might be the only brand I have talked to with a presence in Rhode Island. So, Luke, you're the first with the video on, man. Hey, and Jake, there he is. How are you, gentlemen? And then I'm going to dive in. Where did Rhode Island come from?
It was an accident.
Weird starter, yeah. Too. Like, it's just okay. I mean,
so, we heard from Goat Rodeo, the ability for a brand to translate into new markets is paramount in its ultimate success in this industry. Nobody has done that right. We're really scrappy. We're really efficient and startup-y with how we do things. And we did two experiments this year. One, a neighboring rec market like Nevada, which obviously is a natural fit for our product, given the population, its proximity to California. That's going great. And we also had an opportunity to open up a little tiny operation in Rhode Island, which on its surface makes no sense. But I was born in Massachusetts. I get pings from 100 people every week in Massachusetts begging me to give them Can.
Yep.
And we also, as a company, wanted to figure out, is this something that could work in a medical market? And Rhode Island is medical. We had to modify our packaging to make it compliant. And we set up a small batch manufacturing facility with the help of one of our investors. And we have two shops open up in New England. We want to be a bi-coastal brand. We also want to see if it works in a medical setting. And early results are, you know, it can sell, not as well as in a rec setting, but it makes us think bigger and more holistically about this microdose beverage potential in this country and all over the world.
So I have a good story for you. So of course I was very, very aware of Ken since its launch. You have a good PR team who always keeps me abreast of the news. You know, we cover all that. But the first time I ever tried it, Can of Ken, I was on an Uber in Boston, Massachusetts. And the lady who's sitting next to me asks, like, what do I do? Or no, the driver asks what I do. And the lady who's sitting next to me just like starts talking about how much she loves the cannabis industry. And she just grabs a can of Ken from her purse and goes, my best friend just gave me this to try. Try one. It was awesome. That was crazy. I mean, considering that I had like been offered to receive samples so many times, actually getting it from a stranger at a cab was the weirdest thing.
The best word of mouth story I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that story.
Yeah, that should go. You guys have some awesome testimonials on your page. I'm saying that should go on there. That's incredible.
Like you had launched 2 days before that. Like you had just launched in Massachusetts, by the way. So that was crazy that she even knew about it. And then the driver said he knew about it because he'd seen it, I think, in California. And just the whole situation was so crazy. And talking about crazy, let's talk about your celebrity investors. How do you land a Gwyneth Paltrow type, right?
This was actually kind of strange. First of all, our celebrity round was not something that we planned for. We knew that in order to cross over into the mainstream, we'd have to bring like a household name that does not make you think stoner. Seth Rogen, Martha Stewart, Snoop Dogg, the first wave of celebrities that were commercially involved in cannabis, they're very vocal and it's visually obvious through their social media that they, you know, smoke weed. But in order for cannabis beverages to go mainstream, you need people that are afraid of smoking weed to feel like it's a legitimate thing for them to think about purchasing.
Yeah.
So we were looking for one celebrity investor that would be brave enough to go public. We got our first one was Ruby Rose. We're a queer founded company. She's a queer icon. She has a really amazing investment portfolio. She did Impossible Foods and Rebel, which is another great beverage. And then, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow is actually a family friend of mine. She was my babysitter when I was 2 years old. And so we were introduced to her via our investors in an effort to try to make a partnership happen with Goop. And we went into the meeting and I was just like, hey, I haven't seen you since the early 90s. And she was like, what are you talking about? And then when she realized I was that little kid she babysat, then totally made the meeting a lot more friendly. She was very open to learning about what we're doing. Goop, you know, is like the forefront of next generation health and wellness trends, not afraid of controversy. This is very on brand for her. And she initially passed on the investment, but when she found out about some of our SKU assortment, offering zero sugar options, offering things that you can mix into hot beverages, she knew that we were as maniacal about product innovation as she is, believes in the future, went on CNBC to talk about it. And really it was just all stemming from organic interest in what we're doing and the product. Mm-hmm. Every one of our celebrities, they love the product first and they asked to write a check to be part owners of our business. And, you know, we say, hey, the more the merrier. It's going to take a village to make this a real thing.
It's true, too. I spoke with Darren Criss a few weeks ago for an article on Forbes, which was published this week, by the way, coincidentally. And he was telling me, like, I am not big on cannabis usually, but I tried this and I loved it. And then people explained, like, where this was going. And I just had to be stupid not to invest. And that was, like, his whole thing, right? Like, you know, I saw this and it was like, you know, I need to be a part of this before the train passes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a fantastic article as well. We really enjoyed reading it. And I think it hits on exactly that point, which is, like Luke said, it was the product that brought people in. People ask us all the time, a lot of our peers in cannabis and also regular CPG, how do you put together a round like this? And our answer is always like, we don't know what we're doing. Like we have this product that they love and they came to us. And I think that if the one piece of advice I would say is treat them like business people, because that's actually why they are involved with Cannes. It's not, you know, this is not a marketing deal. This isn't sort of like us saying, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a bunch of celebrities and we could do all this marketing stuff? Like, no, these are really smart, savvy business professionals that love our product and see the mountain that we are climbing up and want to climb with us. And that's really rare. And so, you know, think about your product and think about these folks, not as sort of how can they help get me a leg up on marketing. Think about them as investors and treat them that way.
I love that. I guess as a follow-up, I mean, you may have just answered this question, but does somebody like Gwyneth Paltrow getting involved or potentially a Darren Criss or Ruby Rose, does that change the direction of future products? You know, in terms of being on the forefront of health and wellness, mm-hmm. you know, does it shift anything that you all were currently doing?
It's a good question. We have had since day one a pretty robust product pipeline. I mean, Luke and I only started this company because the set of products we were able to create were so exciting and we spent so much time with them. I mean, we've been working on this for years in advance of launching in various forms. And so we have a pretty strong view on how the product will evolve. But like Luke said, you know, we've listened to our consumers since being on the market for 2 years, and we heard all sorts of really interesting things that have allowed us to go back with that knowledge and create even better products. So we have our Roadies, which are liquid packets that allow people to take Cannes on the go. That would have never come from our original thinking because, you know, our view is consumers want something that's turnkey. So much of cannabis is do this to this and then that to that. And then you'll have this thing that you can figure it out. Where cracking open a can is such an obvious heuristic we have.
Super easy. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's much easier than teaching my mom how to roll a joint. Right. Even like the one hitter, like, you know, you give her a one hitter and it's like the first time she's just like, you know, taking a puff and it's like, Ma, you gotta light it with a lighter. And she goes like, oh damn, I already swallowed the bud. You know, and this is a real thing.
So can is good for your mother is what we're getting at here.
I mean, it doesn't require instructions. If you can't open a can, you know, you got bigger issues.
Yeah. So I guess just one more follow-up question there. Did it open up doors in terms of a target audience? You know, with somebody like Gwyneth Paltrow getting on, I'm assuming all that does is expand the horizons, right? Or does it kind of narrow in a little bit?
This is a very good question. And when we started realizing how many celebrities were interested in being involved in our business, we started thinking really carefully. We don't want to alienate anybody. The amazing thing about our product, and we get consumer level data every day from Ease, which is our number one customer in California, it's 50-50 male, female. It's just as many people age 21 through 29 as there are 40 plus. And so it's a truly cross-generational, gender neutral thing. The cannabis industry in particular is one that has not evolved with an eye toward inclusion. And you mentioned, you know, you've spoken to Evelyn LaChapelle and Virtosa. You know, we assembled a group of people that are forward-facing investors on our cap table that are diverse from, you know, we have people of color, we have white people, we have queer people, we have straight people, we have more of our investors are women than men. And, you know, as an investor mix generally in cannabis, that's really rare. And so maybe a Gwyneth Paltrow would be a turn off for somebody, but a Baron Davis might be a turn on for that same person because he likes basketball and he doesn't like, you know, female forward health and wellness trends. And we're excited to say that even after we announced the first eight, we have another set of celebrity investors that are equally impressive and equally diverse that we have not even made public yet. And
you don't want to bring the scoop to.
Yeah. All right. We'll bring it to you. Don't worry. But every single one of them, we don't just take anybody's money that's interested in being a part owner of the business. We're very selective and thoughtful. You know, are you, somebody that organically likes what we're doing? And do you speak to a group of people that is additive to the people that already love can? 8 out of 10 adults want to drink less alcohol. 6 out of 10 adults are curious about cannabis and don't know where to start. This is something that, you know, makes sense for everybody. And the more people we can get involved to help us tell the story, the better.
I mean, one of the things, you know, that really caught my attention around Ken, whenever talking about it with friends, you know, whether they are part of the LGBTQAI+ community or friends, you know, or allies, you know, they always bring up this thing about diversity. And it seems to be something that you put a particular emphasis on. You know, Darren mentioned it a bunch of times as well. You know, it's part of your messaging. Why? I mean, of course, you know, you said it's queer founded, but what's the whole point of it? What's the deal with such a big emphasis, and how does that translate into the product and the brand itself and the consumer base?
Yeah, I think it's a really important question. So thank you for asking that. You know, from day one, Luke and I, part of what got us excited about building a company, you know, in addition to this product, was we had an opportunity here to create a culture, to build a team in the right way. And we'd worked at companies that had done it well and others that had not. And so we had a really strong view that it started with us. It started with Can. And that's how we think about it today. We've had diversity inclusion from day one in our thinking, in our hiring practices, how we audit our systems and processes. We track this like any other business metric. And you have to. If it's important, why are you not tracking it, right? That starts with us, our sort of Can family. And then we think about that next circle, which is really the partners. Who are you making wealthy? We have all these decisions as a company, even as a small startup in cannabis beverage, which is a small part of a bigger cannabis industry. We have decisions of who are our partners, who are our investors, who do we bring into the Can family, the sort of extended family. And we audit our investors. We ask them questions about what are they doing about diversity and inclusion? Are they investing in people of color founders? Are they bringing those people onto their teams? And then finally, like how do we have an outsized impact beyond sort of our reach in that Can universe by donating, by amplifying voices? You mentioned, you know, it's a big part of our messaging on our Instagram. We like to pass the mic. We like to share stories. People of color, particularly Black people that have been, that we stand on their shoulders in so many ways, doing the exact same thing for which they were put into jail or have lost their lives. And so you can't ignore it. These social justice issues, these issues of racial justice are in this industry. They are so important now more than ever. And you know, Luke and I are two white guys, right? We have to work even harder to pass the microphone, to share those stories, to amplify those voices, to make sure we're donating and supporting the folks in the industry that are working on this, on these issues, and to make sure that we're looking inward and making sure our processes and systems are reflective of the organization we want to be a part of. And it's hard work for sure, but it's really important.
Yeah, I'd add to that, that like the cannabis industry has a diversity, equity, and inclusion problem. Like,
yeah, we want to pretend we don't.
Black and brown communities have been marginalized by, you know, unnecessary legal crackdowns. And suddenly, all of a sudden, there's this green rush. And Jake and I are aware that it's a lot easier as two white dudes who have, you know, business school backgrounds and can get pitch meetings to raise money to have the chance to have a successful business. And we know that we have a substantial leg up in doing that. The people that we've met in this industry that are most impressive, like Amber Center of Supernova Women and Breeze Distro in Oakland, she has bootstrapped multiple businesses that are self-sustaining on a $50,000 loan and is killing it, but does not have the same treatment that somebody like me or Jake would. And we know that, and we think it's a problem, and it doesn't get fixed unless, you know, people who are in a position of privilege are rolling up their sleeves and lifting people who are not as fortunate and helping. And so it's we have major commitments to how we handle this when it comes to hiring, how it comes to donating our money, and how it comes to donating our time and resources and brand to make sure that the industry as a 2.0 is a lot more diverse, equitable, and inclusive than it is today.
By the way, you know, just piggybacking on that, quick note, like big thank you to Benzinga and Jason Rasnick. You know, they funded a company that I started as well called El Planteo. I'm a random guy from Argentina, you know, and I came to them and said, I need investment. And without batting an eye, they said, yeah, we will support you. So, I mean, you know, a lot of people like to say they like to support minority businesses, but when, you know, the time comes to actually cut a check, most people won't. So, you know, big props to Benzinga. I don't know. I got a little bit emotional. Sorry. something resonated with me.
I mean, if you are a cannabis operator today and you are not donating a percentage of your sales to Black and brown entrepreneurs in the space, I don't think you're doing it right. If you're not, you know, reviewing a resume from a person of color for every resume that you review from a white person, then you're not treating the top of the funnel correctly. And I think a lot of cannabis brands are so focused on how to figure out how to be profitable that they are completely missing the point. And the only ones that will survive in this industry are the ones that are doing right by the communities that have been marginalized by its development.
This is incredible. And I will be quoting you, Jake, on who are you making wealthy? I feel like that's the overarching discussion here, one that needs to continually be had. So we thank you guys for that. I do want to touch on just briefly, because I know you all have a time limit here. Where is Can headed in 2021? Any insights you might be able to share without sharing the, as Javi calls it, the secret sauce?
Yeah, it's great. Well, so, I mean, if you really think about what we did in 2020 was, you know, scaling our California business, really establishing it and doing a lot of product innovation. So the Roadies, the High Boys, new flavors, a lot of exciting stuff on that front. 2021 is all about how do we expand that to more consumers, both in California, but also outside of California. And without making any announcements here, we will be adding a number of new state markets in the next few months. We're very excited about and really testing out, James' hypothesis is how far does this brand go? And we believe very strongly that there are people in all of these markets that have the exact same needs that we see in California: frustration around alcohol, some sort of curiosity about cannabis, but a lot of fear too. And we're excited in 2021 to really take this product and the formula that we built in California and spread it. We know it will be hard work. This is not sort of like you can rely on the California brand equity anywhere else. We'll have to build it up from the ground in each state. But it's kind of unique in that way. And it's exciting because it allows us an opportunity to learn from a new set of consumers. And we're in this interesting limbo where you have to go state by state. And so we're going to do it.
I just remembered back in early December, I was chatting with a Chelsea handler who is also a very big cannabis enthusiast. And she had recently parted up with a sweet flower, was it? Yeah, to launch this curated kit, and her beverage of choice was Can. How do you feel about that? Like, did you know what was your reaction when you found out? Did you reach out to her to see if she wants to invest? I don't know.
The day that happened, and we were over the moon. I mean,
that's crazy, right? Like that people honestly, organically go like, this is my favorite product.
I don't blame her. It tastes the best. that helped. But, Chelsea Handler is an iconic piece of the cannabis industry development because she is bridging the gap between people who are really heavily reliant on alcohol. Jake and I know exactly what that's like. And are realizing that you can get just as much social enjoyment out of responsible cannabis usage. And so she's super aligned with our brand. She's irreverent. She's funny. She's smart. And she just kind of like posted that video. Sweet Flower took care of everything and just told her, hey, pick your favorite products and then just like have at it. We were thrilled. We've reached out to her team. I have not talked to Chelsea yet, but Chelsea, if you're out there, give me a call. You're doing a lot of really great marketing for us. We'd love to work with you more.
And if you're a regular listener, I don't know why you haven't been on the show yet. Let's go.
Matthew, who works with her, is a very avid listener of the Benzinga Cannabis Hours. So I'm sure this will reach your ears by next
week. Let's do it. Awesome. Luke, or Jake, one more touch on the social equity part. When you move into other states, how do you expand, that initiative? I'm curious from a business standpoint in terms of giving back, what that looks like for you in terms of maybe vetting where your money goes, how you support this, et cetera.
So we're a part of an organization called Cannabis for Black Lives, which is focused on funding entrepreneurs that are doing good social equity work and have been doing it for a long time. In Massachusetts, which is a market that we are launching very, very soon, We partnered with Equity Opportunities Now. We vetted a bunch of partners. We met Chanel Lindsay, who is fighting for equity reform in Massachusetts. And we ran a give back campaign. And we're actually, you know, asking our investors to participate alongside us to multiply the amount of money that we were able to raise for her. And by meeting people and getting to know them in a real way and understanding the work that needs to be done in order for equity reform to make sense in any market, it's a really good first step in knowing how, if at all, we can participate. It's not our intention to try and crowd out the work that anybody else is doing. It's about lifting people who are already doing the work up and giving them more resources if we can help.
I love that. You guys are leading the way in more than one. We really appreciate your all's insights. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with? Thoughts on the year ahead, where we can find you, where we can find your product in Raleigh, North Carolina is not a thing for 20 years, but you know, I can dream.
The pace of change is accelerating. I mean, if there's one thing we've learned over the last couple of months, you know, it's moving fast. I wouldn't count North Carolina out. But you never know. We'll have a lot of really interesting news about new state markets coming soon. Drinkcan.com, also at drinkcan on Instagram, is the best place to find out that news.
Perfect. Gentlemen, we thank you very much for being here with us today. If there's anything else that you all would like, we will definitely make sure it gets to our audience. But again, thank you all for being here, and we'll talk to you very soon.
So much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you to our guests. So yeah. Flower Hire, Goat Rodeo Capital, and Ken.
Yeah. Thank you all very much. Thank you to the pre-market prep crowd that always pays attention to us after their show. Thank you to our producer, Rohan and Aaron. You are much appreciated. And we are very excited to continue this on next week, January 21st. We will talk to you all then. Special episode, though, with Javi. Who is it with?
Did I spoil it? I don't think I should.
All right. Well, just pay attention then. You know,
so it's all I'm going to say is we're going to be talking about a big ETF with a very famous guy from TV. You figure it out. And tune in for the Benzinga Cannabis Hour every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. February 25th, we have our Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference virtual edition. Don't miss it as well. Benzinga.com/cannabis and elplanteo.com. All of your cannabis news in one site.
Perfect. Awesome. Javi, good doing this with you, my friend. We will see you soon. We'll see everybody next week. And have a great, great rest of your evening.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say it's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.